welcome back to another brand new episode of the Cinephiles series, the 10 days of Oscars here from the Cinephiles. I am the outlaw John Rocha, joined as always by my co-hosts on the Cinephiles, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, and I'm really excited to talk about this movie because this one means a lot to me.
Absolutely. And we did talk, we did do a short on this film for those of you who are patrons of the Cinephiles. And the film we're talking about today is American Fiction. We're going to dive in a little bit deeper into this movie here, which stars the great Jeffrey Wright, who is nominated for Best Actor. Cord Jefferson adapted this novel because it's based on the novel here, Erasure by Percival Everett. And he ended up winning the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar just a couple of days ago, Steve, as we're recording this. So an incredible film, in my opinion, that explores a little bit of the takedown of, or calling out a little bit of the liberal elite for their approach to serious literature and what have you. And just when you think it's going to be about, you know, pointing the finger and berating the liberal elite, which in the film is white liberal elite, we also see the film turn the camera back on the protagonist here, Jeffrey Wright's character, and having to take a look at his life, Thelonious Monk Ellison's, his life, his relationships, and his interactions with his family and his and family friends throughout this movie, and his love interest in the film, Eric Alexander, who he meets there at the beach. So a lot to explore in this film that I thought was fantastic and challenging and interesting and intellectually stimulating while also being fun, funny, and poignant. Steve, your thoughts overall on American Fiction here from writer-director Cord Jefferson?
So in our last episode, we talked about Oppenheimer, and both of us said over and over again why we felt that absolutely was correct in winning Best Picture of the Year. It's the kind of film that should win Best Picture. It is truly a great film and one that I think we'll be talking about for decades to come.
Yeah, yeah.
American Fiction is my favorite film of the year.
Interesting. Okay.
And there's a different, they're different. It's different. Mm-hmm. Is that for American Fiction, and I know this will sound odd considering some of the subject matter, I related more personally to this movie and this character and this family and than any other movie. And one thing that I think is really interesting about it is that it has a high concept idea. And high concept, for those of you who don't know, you know, Jaws is a high concept movie. You look at the poster, I totally get what that movie's about. It has an idea at the central core that people can understand right away. You see the trailer for the movie and you go, oh, this intellectual African-American writes this thing as a joke and it's going to become a big hit. I totally get it, right? That's and you understand what themes it's going to deal with, and that's great. Mm-hmm. That is not what makes this movie great for me. I mean, that stuff's all great. There's no criticism about it. I think it skewers a whole bunch of things that are good to skewer, explores a bunch of great ideas. It's all fantastic. It's the family that makes this a great film. Is that stuff, that plot is really interesting. The family, these characters, they're so real. And I saw so much of, they're not exact, this is not my family, but they're similar. You know, like I so related to these people and the struggles they were going to. I so got it. And in particular, Jeffrey Wright. I hope I'm not as angry a person as Jeffrey Wright is, but man, I feel for him. I really do. I related to him so much.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest performances, and if some people have argued the greatest performance of Jeffrey Wright's career, which I think is really difficult to parse and have that conversation.
This guy's so good,
right?
Without
really exploring all of the work he's done throughout the years. I mean, I would say you would have to have watched a lot of his movies in order to make a claim like that, or all of his movies really in order to make a claim like that and really dove into what he was doing. But I do think this ranks amongst his greatest performances ever. He is interesting. He is challenging. He is complex. He's affable. He's someone you'd want to know in one moment, and then in another moment, you see the nerd rage pop out. You see these unresolved anger issues he has with his family, being his dad's son, and how that played itself out in the family dynamics. Seeing what his interactions with Sterling K. Brown, his brother there, playing his brother in the film, and how they interact. Tracy Ellis Ross, with what happens to her. We have those scenes with them at the beginning, having the back and forth about taking care of their mom and how he kind of ran off. I saw a lot of myself in Jeffrey Wright's approach to family, to the situation, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, I've always been wanting to leave, not leave my family necessarily because I don't love them, but always wanting something bigger, something more. And I left my family to go to college, left my family to go to the military, left my family to move to the West Coast or to go to London. Like, these are things that I did to try to kind of explore more than what I had at home. And as a guy who had his father pass away from cancer while I was in Los Angeles, I only visited my dad like 5-6 times because all I could afford to fly in and see my father. And we weren't, you know, we didn't have a family with a lot of money, so I couldn't keep going back and forth. And so, but I felt this guilt of like having my family take care of my dad, but also felt that sense of convenience that, hey, someone's there. I don't have to put my life on hold. I can go because I'm pursuing something else. So there was a lot of the mixed feelings that I felt connection to with Jeffrey Wright overall. And yes, occasionally the arrogance. And Steve, we've spoken about some of our arrogance, you and I respectively, in our lives towards certain things. And as we get older, we get a little more perspective. And we're seeing this character of Thelonious Mongelis and Dr. Thelonious Mongelis going through a transition period in his life where he has his feelings and condescension validated, but then he has it turned around on him as the film goes along, where he has to now suffer the consequences for real of his actions. He doesn't get to get a fairy tale ending. He gets a brutally honest ending that I thought was fantastic to see for a film like this.
I keep going back to the quote from Leo Tolstoy, which is the first line of Anna Karenina. Mm. And I think it's something like, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's something like, all happy families are the same, but unhappy families are unhappy in their own particular way.
Yeah.
It's something like that. And I just think about this family, and it's funny, right at this moment, you were talking about the caregiver and the convenience that you're far away. And my mom just had knee surgery and is recovering, and she had a knee replacement, and it's super, super painful.
Right.
And my sister is up there sleeping in the bed next to my mom,
yeah,
you know, and I'm going to fly up in a few days and be there. But my sister is the primary caregiver. She's the one closer to my mom. She's the one dealing with more of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's very much what's going on with Thelonious Monk's family in Boston. Yeah. And I just think they captured this family so well. Yeah, yeah, like, you meet the sister, you like her immediately.
Yeah.
She's giving Thelonious shit.
Yeah.
There's obviously conflicts. There's obviously love. I also, one of the things that I think is so great about this family is, yeah, is this a movie about race? Yes, it absolutely is.
Yes.
And certainly it's also about cliches within the racial world and how art sees race. And this family that they depict is a perfect rebuttal to that, because this family doesn't fall into any of the stereotypes that Thelonious Monk later sells as Stagger Lee to this thing. Yeah. This is a wealthy, successful, everybody is, you know, we got three doctors, you know, we got people, you know, the dad was a doctor. We have this professor of literature, highly intellectual. There is a servant living in the house. They are very, very elegant people. They have a home. They have a beach house. They have all of these things, or have grown up in this way. Yeah. And yet, and so lots of America goes, oh, good, then your problems are probably solved, because if you had money and you have education, you should be fine. And it's like, no, they have deep systemic long-term problems within this family, and they're all struggling. Mm-hmm. And sadly, the person who seems the most together is the sister who leaves us the most quickly.
Yeah, right. Which I think is a great way to open the door for him. Now he has no longer a buffer that he has used and exploited, that she called him out on, by the way, before she does leave in the film. She calls him out on that buffer. So now with that buffer removed, he has to confront this and deal with it and navigate it with everything else that's going on for him professionally. So being pulled in two different directions overall. And I like the fact that I may connect to him, but I never feel sympathy for him. And I like that. I'm navigating this as I'm watching him navigate it. And I'm sensing elements of myself in recognizing elements of myself in some of this, but also recognizing this completely as its own thing. And I think what's also fascinating is, here he comes from all this wealth and intelligence, yet he looks down on this idea of the perception of the Black experience in these literature novel, or in these novels rather, as we see through Issa Rae's character, who does a wonderful job there reading her novel rather, and talking about the characters and putting this out there. And he is so shocked to see this as a part of it. He thinks he's unlocked it, like, oh, aren't right. you ashamed that you're doing this and blah blah blah. But actually, he doesn't understand what she's doing. And then when he participates in it, he has to confront his own hypocrisy throughout that whole thing and how he can't control it. And he dials into it because his own ego, his need for his ego yep. to be stroked, his need to feel validated because his books aren't selling anymore. As the great John Ortiz, who plays his agent, reminds us throughout the movie what his situation is in, and then participates, becomes initially an unwilling participant, and then becomes a bigger participant in this whole situation as it gets bigger and bigger. So I like that even within himself, he has a little bit of, shall I say, because I'm a person of, shall I say, a person of color, I'm a Latino, shall I say, he has a little bit of racism towards his own community and how he approaches certain aspects of how it's presented. And then he is confronted with it when he has to, when he dials into what Issa Rae is doing when he writes his novel. So I like that that it's working on so many levels and challenging us, not only as human beings, but also as people who are members of a race or ethnicity, and also intelligence versus the perception that this person is not that intelligent and therefore has maybe lesser value. So the fact that all of that is going on while also this incredible family story that we're navigating with a fractured family, a gay son, an overachieving daughter, a son who is kind of wants to have things his way and has conveniently accepted things his way. I love that it's challenging us on so many levels throughout the movie, man.
Well, what it doesn't give you a place to sit and yeah. feel like I'm superior, I know the right answer, I've got this figured
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I love and it's funny because going back to the trailer,
yeah.
the trailer makes you go, oh, I get it. We're going to make fun of the white liberal elites. And,
yes, yes.
And the trailer essentially casts Issa Rae's character, Sinatra Golden,
yeah.
the way that he sees her at the right. beginning of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the movie doesn't let her stay there. Like, no. And he becomes so much more suspect. I love that the film opens with a classroom, and having been a teacher, I've experienced some things like this, not yeah. this exact thing, mm-hmm. but that he puts the N-word up on the board, and his white student is very offended that he does that. And he's like, no, I'm the black man. Like, I can put this on the board. But then it also is very clear that he just lays into her and makes her yeah. cry and is in trouble with the faculty. And I'm like, okay, I have seen this versions of this happen multiple times in school and in the world that we're in. And so I'm totally with him.
Right.
Except, wait, you made her cry and you said what? Like, mm-hmm. like that. It's that thing of he has such a chip on his shoulder. And so he thinks that he knows everything that's going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. You know, like it, but it's still, that doesn't mean that it doesn't completely poke fun at the white intellectual elite in the publishing industry. And they fucking deserve to be poked fun at. I mean, it's like, I'm a white Jewish guy. I've not dealt with this particular stuff, but I have dealt with executives in these industries and mm-hmm. been told things just as stupid as the things that they're saying to him. And the fact is, this is what he's angry about is definitely true.
Yeah.
There are depictions of African Americans that sell, that people want to buy,
right.
that keep them in a certain box yeah. that is not the totality of that experience, you know?
Right.
And the fact that he wants to attack that idea is fantastic. The way in which he attacks that idea is just, it's just so powerful and mm-hmm. And it's so confusing, and it keeps yeah. putting you on different sides. And it gets to this point, particularly when we get into the area where they're in where he's brought on to the panel to judge the books, including the book, the crappy book that he wrote. It is so painful, and it just makes me squirm so much.
Yeah.
And I kept doing, and this is why I do think the ending is quite brilliant. Whereas I went, how the fuck are we going to get out of this?
Yeah.
Like, where is this going to go? You know,
lead us to. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a gift of the film, in that, as you said earlier, Steve, it doesn't give you a place to sit down because it's a film that's exposing and ripping the layers off of all of this stuff. So if it landed in a place that made you feel comfortable, it would have absolutely undercut the whole point of the film, which is that we are in complex times now, navigating people's either affected feelings or authentic offense on situations or fabricated offense or even learned offense of certain things. We have to navigate them and then find out the authenticity of it all. And you're right. Like when they're having the book club and the book and they're all reading the books and seeing the different approaches to it with the one guy that seems a bit more conservative than the others, then you have the other ones who are look like they're hugging trees all the time. Yeah. So you have their reactions to it. And there is a stripping back, in the judgment of certain people who essentially have cultural colonialism. And by that, I mean, you see people who are not black kind of co-opt the black experience, elements of it for their own benefit and not actually understand the black experience, right? Like, oh, this feels real and authentic because they speak like this. Or this, you know, I listen to rap music, and so I'm a white person, let's say, and I can listen to the rap music. I take on the badassness of the rap music without actually having to live those experiences, but somehow I'm a badass. So you see those things happen all the time. And so I love that the film spends time with that, but doesn't let you feel like this is just a let's destroy white people film. This is very much not that. This is very much that has an element in the film, but it's also let's take a look at this guy specifically who enjoys being condescending to that experience because it makes him feel better. But that's such a shallow foundation for which to build his arrogance and his condescension on. And that gets chipped away at as the film goes along. And no more so than in the relationship that he has throughout the film here with the great Erica Alexander, who I loved for many, many years in a number of films that she did, number of TV shows that she did. So I really enjoyed her being part. She was a wonderful surprise in the film, Stephen. Further proof that, you know, there's a lot of actors who work today who don't get a chance to be a part and lead in these feature films because there's limited opportunity for people of color, for black actors, black actresses. And she shined like a diamond throughout the whole movie in the beautiful relationship. And then when the turn happens, you really sympathize with her when the turn happens and you're just like even more devastated. And it challenges you to like Thelonious because of what he does to her near the end of the movie.
Well, I think this points out exactly what you're saying, which is that are we going to do that? He's taking aim at this liberal lead in this hypocrisy, and he's totally right. And he is simultaneously blind to all his own hypocrisy and his own immaturity and all that stuff. And the relationship with Coraline is what exposes it because I think about where's this movie going to go when I'm watching a movie and I go, oh, she's his hope. She's the if he can find love with her, it can he can expose these vulnerabilities and he can deal with some of his insecurities and maybe fill up some of the empty places in his soul that would make him be less angry and less all this stuff. And the movie is not going to go that way. The movie is going to say no, he hasn't dealt with his shit in the way that he needs to. And I think that's just such a powerful piece of what's going on. And I think this is what's again, I like complexity. I don't like people just going, oh, the black people like this and white people are like this. And, this is how it gets. And I also think, and this relates just to the, you know, the book award thing. And you and I have talked about this more off mic. We've talked about it a little bit on mic. But I think a lot of people's stances are frequently to some degree performative. And they go, what am I supposed to believe? Okay, I'm a liberal person. Therefore, how should I respond to this thing in order to be accepted by this liberal community? And the same is true in a conservative place. And I would see this with my students. And this sounds like it's an odd analogy. But like, I would ask the student, okay, well, here's this moment. What would you do in this film next? And they would look at me and they would be trying to figure out what is the answer that I want them to give. And so they're trying to predict what I think so they can say the same thing that I think so they can be part of it. And I'm like, no, I want to know what you think. And I would say half my classes really struggled with that because we're actually not being trained in our world to just go, this is how I feel. This is what I think. This is my reaction. We are trained to try to figure out what is the popular opinion and then hold that opinion.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what's happened in that book group. It's something that happens in our world all the time. Yeah. And we, most people, I do not think actually think through, because particularly in our world today, it's scary to come out with an opinion that doesn't align with your peers or with yes. the group. You could get really shot down and hurt, which is what the Thelonious Monk does to that student at the very beginning of the movie. Yeah. You know, it's like the, and so there's this thing of us all trying to figure out what we're supposed to say and not actually trying to be just who we are. And yeah. I think that's part of what the movie's about too.
Yeah. Yeah. We should talk about, I want to give some more love to Leslie Uggams, who plays his mom, such a legendary actress, to have her be a part of this film. This is a woman who has studied at Juilliard. She started out working with the likes of Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, and Dinah Washington. She won a Tony in 1968 for as best actress in a musical. And she was in Roots, and she worked for a number of years. She's on the board member of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. So this is a woman of respect and legendary status within the acting community, and specifically also within the Black acting community. So to have her play the character as beautifully as she plays her throughout the movie, and see her journey as she deals with this oncoming disease that's affecting her as she's getting older, I thought was beautiful. You know, seeing her vacillate between being with it and not being with it, I thought it was a wonderful performance. And it was heartbreaking, man, and devastating seeing those scenes where she was out of her mind, you know, when she wasn't in her right mind, or when she wandered off wearing the robe and everything. Like, it was just heartbreaking. So I love that was such a smart thing for the original writer of the book to put in, and also to transfer that in the adaptation, because she's like the heart of the movie in a lot of ways, and it's the thing that he has to keep coming back to as a window into his own family when he's confronted with those issues.
Two things about this. Yeah. The first, and I'm going to bring up something very strange, which is one of the things this made me think about is the Cosby yeah. Show. And obviously there's reasons yeah, right. we might have problems with the Cosby Show today sure. because of its lead. But one of the great things about that show is that it said, hey, there's this African-American culture, which is the successful intellectual yeah. and artistic elite. You yeah. know, there are all those things, like, you know, I think Bill Cosby's dad in the show was a jazz musician.
Yes.
And they would have artists and poets and dancers and all these people come through their worlds, because that's mm-hmm. the world that they existed in. And and what was so amazing about the Cosby Show is that world is real and had never really been shown.
Right.
And this is another example of it, like that her and Leslie Uggams brings all that stature, yeah. all of that elegance, all of that, this was a great lady, yeah. you know?
Yes.
And again, this is why, because I connect my family to some of this stuff. Cause yeah. you know, that's, you know, I grew up with people that where there were servants and there was stuff like mm-hmm. that going on. And so, like, A, I connected to it. And then B, watching a person who is this person of stature struggle yeah. with her mind, and having people with dementia in my life, it was very, very real to me. And it leads to, there is a mistake, a misunderstanding that she makes late yeah. in the film yeah. that you think, you know, Jeffrey Wright's character is getting some kind of closure, some kind yeah. of love. And then she says a thing, and we can't ever know which yeah. the mistake was. Yeah. It could be that she thought she was talking to the wrong person the whole time. Right. And it could be that she just said the wrong name. Yeah. And we never know. And Thelonious Monk never gets to know. And it is absolutely crushing. It is just, and this is, again, this movie isn't going to give you a place to feel, oh, I'm cool. I mean, the yeah. same, we haven't talked about Sterling K. Brown. I'm sure you're probably going to bring him up
as soon as you were done talking, but if you want to bring it up now. Yeah.
I mean, what a great performance. I mean, like, he's fucking great. He's just such a treasure as an actor,
yeah.
but he is a irritating, angry, self-righteous, self-involved person who's obviously problematic in all sorts of ways, who right. says some real deep truth
yeah.
multiple times in the movie. And what a fantastic character.
Especially out on the porch near the end yep. of the movie when yep. they're having the back and forth about their experiences with their respective father and what that was like. Because again, Thelonious is confronted with the fact that he'd always sided with his father, thought his father did all the right things. Listen, I was that way too. Like, I thought my dad walked on water, and it wasn't until he passed in 2008 that I saw my mother for real for the first time, with all her dimensions and all her levels, And I found a much more connection with my mother, authentic connection with who I am as a person, than I did with my dad. And that was a hell of a discovery for me, or an epiphany for me, after my father passed, as our relationship deepened and is still deepening every time we talk. So it's a fascinating thing. So to see that conversation, because I sometimes talk to my sister about her experience with my dad, are completely different than my experiences with my father, and what have you. And so I think that's a fascinating element here. That's a part of this. And Steve, again, as if all this other stuff isn't enough, right, Let's throw in a gay son and what that experience was like with him being a gay black man in his family, how his father, it seems like his father treated him, and all of that, and that experience as well, to have an element of this. So I love that there was all of these issues running through, and nothing fell into the stereotypes of the white liberal and all of that, but like, it wasn't about that necessarily. It was about the family overall and these relationships and these experiences. And I do also want to give love to Lucretia, Myra Lucretia Taylor, who plays Lorraine, as you said, the servant or the family friend in the house who serves. And then Raymond Anthony Thomas, who played Maynard, who is so the great security guy. And the way they get together in the wedding, it is so beautiful. Juxtapose that with what happens with Erica and Jeffrey Wright in their relationship. Yeah. He was looking down on them getting to it. Yep. He was making little jokes about them, little shots, but they're the ones who understand the simplicities of life and understand what's important in life, and they authentically come together. And it's a beautiful wedding and a beautiful union. And you compare that to the damage that the Thelonious has, clearly, that he's not confronted. He doesn't deserve to get that happiness yet. He's got to confront those issues first, and then maybe down the road, he will get to experience the joy that Lorraine and Maynard experience in the film.
I think their relationship is so lovely, and you're right, and it just contrasts. So, like, this is a movie about, you know, Thelonious Monk Ellison dealing with his own crap.
Yeah.
And to what degree he actually deals with it is a good question. But I do want to go back just to the father thing, because, yeah, you probably had this too, of like, there are multiple elders in my life where there had to be some serious analysis, discussion after they passed, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where people start really comparing notes.
Yeah.
And when you start comparing notes and you go, oh, that was your experience, oh, that was my experience, and you start to, you have to work through these people. You know, yeah, one is my father-in-law, one is my grandmother, one is Hoover, you know, not a family member, but like, yeah, where you have to do the debrief after and go like, well, what happened here? And you tell the stories, because they hover over you in your life, yeah, in this really powerful way. And we can't escape them. You know, we have to deal, yeah, with them. And I think, you know, Monk Ellison hasn't dealt with it. He hasn't, yeah, figured out what his relationship to this family is.
Yeah. Just saying, I'm sorry for what happened with Eric Alexander's character, and then just figuring out that he has to commit to this family more, isn't enough. There's more paths for him to walk before he can find this closure, or there's more steps for him to walk down these paths before he can find the closure he's looking for. And I like that the film doesn't give him an easy end. What did you think about the Adam Brody character? And what did you think about how that all played out as we wrap up this conversation on American Fiction, his character in the film, and the purpose he serves at the end, being that producer who ends up approving the film, and that Thelonious does, in essence, kind of sell out and make that film?
I think it's hilarious. Well, I think I'll say two things about it. One is, yeah, we meet him and he's sort of one of these, you know, yeah, white liberal, wants to put everything in it, believes the Stagger Lee story.
Yes.
And wants it to be that. The fact that he goes back to him at, yeah, the end.
Yeah.
I don't think the movie allows you to go, did he learn a lesson? Like, what? Where, yeah, is this the right? I mean, but it is what it is, though, is we live in the world, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't get to make your art with zero compromises. You have to find a way to do this. And they are, at least to some degree, telling the story. I always have a weird thing, by the way, with movies that at the end of the movie, we're making the movie of the movie that we saw. You know what I mean? That's always sort of a weird thing. Yeah. But at this one, I like it. How do you feel about it at the end?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was a really smart way to end the film. You don't get him to have her send him a text back or, yep, call him back. He's constantly in a state of like waiting for her, because he's the one that damaged her. And she was, and we do that in life. And this is a true thing in life. Sometimes if you're a damaged person, or you've got stuff going on, a great thing comes into your life. You're not ready for it. You fumble the ball with it, to use a sports term. And then you have to hope you learn the lesson, if you become self-aware enough, to learn the lesson of the loss of that person. I've certainly had that experience more than once in my life. And you learn the lesson from all of that until eventually you handle the situation that you're supposed to handle within yourself, so that when the next gem comes along, as I'm experiencing now with my with the Lady Outlaw, you are able to take advantage of that and appreciate it and understand how to navigate a relationship like that with more care and understanding and knowledge of how to deal with that kind of situation. So I love that that is an unresolved thing. And I love that Adam Brody is a part of that by shooting the movie based on the thing. So he wants to default to obviously the happy ending, which is what we see in the movie. But in reality, that's not how it works. So once again, breaking even that trope throughout the movie, that at the end, we were expecting a happy ending, weren't we? Like when he was getting the tag, like we were like, oh my God, she did come back. Oh my God, she forgave him. Yes, because maybe there's something here. And then you realize, no, that's you. So I love that he even turned it back on us as the viewers, going, you fell into the trap, just like everybody else in these movies, in this movie, fell into the trap of thinking a certain thing was happening when the reality is more complex and much more difficult and most of the time disappointing. And so I loved that as an ending for the movie. And Adam Brody served that really well throughout the film. And he's a damn good actor. I love whenever he pops up in anything. So it was nice to see him as an element in this film as well. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, we haven't spoken much about the director.
Yes, Cord Jefferson, who, as I've said, just won the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar. First time directing a movie, was very complimentary of his entire cast, and also called out the industry that they need to stop making $200 million movies and make $20, $10 million movies, or I think he said $45 million movies.
That is the correct math.
Yes. So your thoughts, Steve, on Cord Jefferson and his what confident hand here as a first-time director.
So starting at the end, that's what I'm sure you've heard me say that before, almost exactly what he said. Let's make 20, $10 million movies.
Yeah.
Because it's like the risk is the same, and you have, and this is the year, and maybe this is the year Hollywood's going to hear this, because these movies made good money.
Yeah.
You know, I think he has, for a first-time director, he has an amazingly strong hand. The script is great, first of all. And he managed to cast top to bottom incredible actors. Mm-hmm. But there is no feeling. I would never have thought this was a first time director. This seems like a guy that knew exactly the movie he was trying to make and went out and made it. So I'm super impressed. And I'm like, okay, what's your next movie? I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. I felt that way too, especially from his speech and how authentic he was in his speech. And I watching this movie, and look, handing this many difficult topics to confront and navigate and explore in a movie, and having him pull it off as well as he did by the end, this is a confident, strong director that all studios should be banging on the door of to hire for their next project, especially one that challenges people emotionally, intellectually, and societally, if that's a word, that like it does in this movie, for sure. All right. Well, Steve, any final words on the film as we wrap up here?
It's a great movie. I probably own it at some point. I'll watch it lots of times. I loved it top to bottom.
Yep, I agree with Steve. This is one that I'll definitely own, and it's one that I'll happily stumble upon and watch an hour of, or watch a half hour of, because it's so well acted. It's so well adapted from the original source novel with that screenplay that Cord wrote. It's so well handled in how it takes you through these numerous issues throughout the film and lands in a place that I think leaves a resonant feeling within you that, hey, it's not always going to all work out, but hopefully you can learn some lessons along the way. And I love films like that, bro, because there's always new things to discover in the interactions with everybody in the movie, for sure. All right, well, there you go. That's our conversation on American Fiction. Thank you to everyone who's been joining us for these 10 days of Oscars. We'll have a new movie tomorrow that we're talking about from the Best Picture list. We hope you enjoyed the Oscars, and we hope you enjoyed American Fiction winning Best Adapted Screenplay. Steve, where can they find you, and what do we have to tell them about the cinephiles?
SR Morris is where you can find me on Twitter. That's the best place. SR Morris 1 on Instagram, where I'm there, but I don't really do very much because I still am too old to understand Instagram. We're Cine_Files on Twitter. We're the Cinephiles podcast on Instagram. Patreon.com/TheCinephiles if you want to support the show. And you can listen there to our shorts. You can get ad-free versions of the show. We do watch-alongs. We have our Cinephiles advisory board. We also have a new subscription tier at Apple Podcasts where you can get ad-free versions of the show and our Cinephile shorts. And you can buy or stream anything we've ever reviewed at cinephiles.net. I think that's all the stuff.
Bang. As for me, you can find me at The Roka Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, The Outlaw Nation on Twitch, my other YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRokaSays. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another half an hour discussion on one of these Best Picture nominees. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of one of these here on The Cinephiles. Peace. Until then.